Every day, millions of women wake up and measure themselves against a screen. Not against a neighbor, not against a friend, against a feed that never shows exhaustion, failure, or doubt. The images are polished, the bodies are perfected, the lives look effortless. And slowly, quietly, comparison stops being curiosity and becomes judgment. This pressure does not arrive with warnings. It slips into mornings and late nights, into scrolling between responsibilities, into moments meant for rest. Women are told this is empowerment, visibility, choice, but the cost is rarely named. Confidence erodes without a single insult spoken. Self-worth bends without a hand ever touching it. We rarely ask who carries the weight of this culture. We rarely ask who profits while silence spreads. This is not about jealousy or weakness. This is about what happens when identity is built inside a mirror designed to sell perfection and never turn away. Chapter 1, The Mirror That Never Turns Off. The shift did not arrive as a threat. It arrived as an invitation. Early social media offered connection, creativity, and a promise that anyone could be seen. For many women, especially young women, it felt like a door opening instead of a trap closing. At first, the screen looked harmless. Photos shared between friends, moments posted for memory, small circles of approval that felt human and familiar. The idea was simple: show yourself and be known. Then the scale changed. The audience grew from dozens to thousands, then millions. Images stopped being casual and started being calculated. What rose to the top was not honesty, but performance. The system learned quickly. Faces held attention longer than landscapes. Bodies held attention longer than words. Luxury held attention longer than ordinary life. The reward was visibility, and visibility became currency. For women, this shift carried a particular weight. Beauty was already policed long before screens existed. Youth was already prized. Thinness, lightness, smoothness, symmetry had long been measured. The feed did not invent these pressures. It industrialized them. Images on the screen were no longer reflections. They were products. Lighting was adjusted. Angles were chosen. Editing softened skin and erased fatigue. Time itself was bent to remove bad days from public view. None of this announced itself as manipulation. It arrived dressed as aspiration. Look at what is possible. Look at what you could be. Look at how close you are if you try harder. Comparison used to be local, a neighbor, a classmate, a coworker. It had limits shaped by geography and circumstance. The screen removed those limits. Now comparison is global, endless, immediate. A woman can wake up and, before standing up, absorb hundreds of lives that appear better than her own, more beautiful, more successful, more desired, more certain. The algorithm does not care how this feels. It cares what keeps attention. Content that triggers longing, envy, or inadequacy performs well. So it is rewarded, repeated, amplified. What rises is not balance. What rises is intensity. Extremes of beauty, extremes of wealth, extremes of happiness. Ordinary life disappears into the background noise. Women are told they are choosing this, choosing to follow, choosing to scroll. But choice inside a system designed to pull attention is not neutral. It is shaped, nudged, reinforced. Over time, something subtle happens. The feed becomes a measuring tool. Not consciously at first, just a glance, a pause, a quiet internal question. Why does her life look so easy? Why does my body not look like that? Why does everyone else seem ahead? These questions repeat, daily, hourly. They sink below awareness and become assumptions. I am behind, I am lacking, I am failing at something everyone else understands. The images never argue back. They never show the unpaid help, the hidden debt, the loneliness behind the smile. They do not show the work it took to stage effortlessness. What they show is outcome without process, perfection without cost, a result detached from reality. The pressure is not always loud. Often it is quiet. It lives in the moment a woman avoids the camera. In the moment she edits herself before speaking. In the moment she dismisses her own achievements as small. Validation becomes externalized. A post performs well and the day feels lighter. A post sinks and something inside tightens. The body reacts before the mind names it. This is not vanity. This is conditioning. Attention is reward. Silence feels like rejection. Over time, the nervous system learns the rhythm. Women learn what works. Certain poses, certain smiles, certain versions of themselves. Other parts are trimmed away. Complexity fades. Authenticity is praised in words but punished in practice. Raw moments do not perform unless they are carefully packaged. Vulnerability must be aesthetic. Pain must be palatable. The mirror never turns off. It travels in pockets, it follows into bedrooms and bathrooms, it waits beside the bed at night. Rest becomes difficult when comparison is constant. The mind does not shut down cleanly. It replays images, it edits memories, it imagines how life looks from the outside. For some women, the pressure intersects with race, class, and geography. Beauty standards are not neutral. They reflect power. Certain features are rewarded. Others are ignored or corrected. Women who do not fit the narrow ideal work harder to be seen or disappear from the frame entirely. The feed claims diversity while reinforcing hierarchy. Success stories are elevated. Quiet struggles are buried. The system celebrates winners and treats everyone else as invisible labor. It becomes harder to trust your own reflection. The mirror at home competes with the mirror in your hand. One shows reality, the other shows a fantasy curated by strangers. When reality loses, the loss feels personal, as if the body itself has failed, as if effort alone should close the gap. No one announces this moment. There is no single post that breaks something open. It is erosion, not collapse. Confidence wears down like stone underwater, slowly, invisibly, until one day a woman cannot remember when she last felt enough without checking a screen. The culture frames this as motivation, as hustle, as self-improvement, but motivation built on inadequacy is fragile. It demands constant proof. And proof is never final. There is always someone more admired, always another image waiting to reset the standard. This is the first cost, not depression, not crisis, but the quiet restructuring of self-worth around a system that cannot love back. And as the mirror keeps reflecting perfection without pause, the question sharpens. What happens when women stop measuring life by their own values and start measuring it by a feed designed to keep them chasing something they can never hold? Chapter 2. When comparison turns inward, the shift from looking outward to turning inward is not dramatic. It is quiet. It happens without announcement. The comparison that once felt external begins to settle inside the body and the mind. At first, the feed is something you observe. Other women, other lives, other standards. Over time, it becomes something you carry. The images no longer stay on the screen. They follow you into how you see yourself. This is where the pressure deepens. The system no longer needs to speak. Women begin to police themselves. A photo appears. The body reacts before thought forms. A tightening in the chest, a drop in mood, a sense of being exposed and evaluated even when no one is watching. This reaction is learned. Repetition trains it. The brain associates certain images with threat to self-worth, not physical threat, but social threat, the risk of being less desirable, less successful, less chosen. The feed rewards narrow ideals again and again, bodies with specific proportions, faces without texture, lives without visible mess. Even when diversity is displayed, it is often filtered through the same lens of polish and performance. Women absorb these patterns. They begin to scan themselves for errors: weight, skin, hair, age, energy, achievement, timing. Why am I not further along? Why do I look tired? Why does my life feel harder than it should? The system encourages individual blame. If success looks effortless on screen, then struggle must mean failure. The possibility that the image itself is constructed fades into the background. Shame thrives in isolation. Comparison culture is isolating by design, scrolling is private, self-judgment happens in silence. Women rarely say out loud how deeply these images affect them. Admitting it feels weak, jealous, ungrateful. So the pressure stays hidden. Even confidence becomes performative. Women learn to present strength while privately questioning their worth. The gap between appearance and inner reality widens. This internal split is exhausting. One version of the self faces the world. Another carries doubt, envy, and quiet resentment inward. Over time, self-talk shifts. Encouragement turns into correction. Compassion turns into critique. You should look better. You should be doing more. You should be happier by now. The word should becomes a constant presence. It does not motivate, it punishes. The feed does not show the accumulation of these moments. It does not show the nights spent replaying images. It does not show the mornings that begin with inadequacy before the day even starts. Women are encouraged to brand themselves, to market their lives, to curate an identity that can compete. This creates another layer of pressure. Not only must you live well, you must make it look good. Struggle is acceptable only if it leads to visible success. Anything unresolved feels like failure. anything ordinary feels embarrassing. The emotional cost grows heavier for women navigating caregiving, financial pressure, or systemic barriers. The feed rarely accounts for these realities. It presents one timeline, one pace, one definition of winning. Falling outside that frame feels personal even when it is structural. For many women, anger never surfaces. It turns inward instead. The system is not questioned, the self is. Why am I so affected by this? Why can I not just ignore it? This question itself becomes another source of shame. The inability to detach is framed as weakness, rather than a predictable response to constant psychological pressure. The culture praises resilience, while refusing to examine what people are being asked to endure. As comparison deepens, joy narrows. Achievements feel smaller when measured against a feed full of extremes. Gratitude becomes harder to access. Even rest feels undeserved. There's always someone doing more, always someone rising faster. The body holds this stress. Sleep is disrupted, appetite changes, energy fluctuates. The nervous system stays alert in a world that never stops displaying better options. Women begin to disappear from spaces where they feel they cannot compete. Cameras are avoided, social gatherings feel heavy, silence grows. This withdrawal is not laziness or apathy, it is self-protection, but it comes with loss. Opportunities are missed, voices go quiet, presence shrinks. The feed continues without them. It does not notice who leaves. What remains visible are the winners, the confident, the curated. This reinforces the illusion that everyone else is thriving. Inside this loop, women learn to mistrust their own experiences. If everyone looks happy, then sadness must be personal failure. If everyone looks successful, then struggle must be incompetence. Reality becomes suspect. The image becomes authority. The comparison no longer asks who is better. It asks what is wrong with me. This is the turning point. When the mirror stops reflecting outward and becomes a judge within. And by the time this internalization is recognized, if it is recognized at all, the damage is no longer theoretical. It has already reshaped identity, relationships, and the way women move through the world. The question that lingers at the edge of this chapter is not whether comparison harms. It is this. When a culture trains women to carry the weight of a system that profits from their insecurity, who will be held responsible when that weight becomes unbearable? Chapter 3, The Cost We Do Not Count. The harm does not stay contained within the individual. It spreads outward, quietly, into everyday life. By the time it is noticed, it has already shaped behavior, relationships, and choices. Comparison culture does not only change how women see themselves, it changes how they move through the world. Energy once used for creativity is redirected into self-monitoring. Time once spent resting is spent scrolling. Attention that could nourish relationships is absorbed by silent evaluation. This cost is not dramatic, it's cumulative. Women show up tired in ways that are hard to explain, not only physically but emotionally, carrying a sense of falling behind without being able to name the race. In relationships, the pressure distorts intimacy. When self-worth feels unstable, reassurance is never enough. Compliments bounce off doubt. Affection competes with images of idealized lives. Some women become quieter. They speak less about their struggles. They do not want to sound bitter or insecure. Silence feels safer than exposure. Others perform strength relentlessly. They present confidence as armor. Inside, the strain builds. Parenting is affected. Children absorb what they see. When comparison governs a household, it teaches lessons without words. Bodies are judged. Success is rushed. Worth feels conditional. Mothers compare themselves to impossible standards of beauty, productivity, patience, and joy. The feed does not show exhaustion, so exhaustion becomes personal failure. Work is shaped by this pressure as well. Professional achievements feel diminished when measured against curated success stories. Ambition becomes tangled with inadequacy. Some women push harder, chasing validation that never settles. Others withdraw, convinced they are already behind. The system produces both outcomes, overwork and disengagement. Neither is accidental. Class pressure intensifies the harm. Influencer culture often displays lifestyles detached from economic reality. Travel, fashion, leisure, and consumption are presented as normal milestones. For women without access to these resources, comparison carries shame layered onto scarcity. Financial stress becomes moralized. Struggle becomes evidence of personal deficiency. The feed rarely acknowledges structural barriers. It rewards aesthetics, not context. The message is simple. If you are not thriving, you are not trying hard enough. This message fractures community. Instead of solidarity, competition takes root. Instead of shared understanding, isolation grows. Women compare themselves not only to influencers, but to each other. Friendship becomes strained by unspoken measurement. Envy hides behind encouragement. Distance grows where support could exist. Culture reframes harm as individual weakness. If a woman is overwhelmed, she is told to log off, to manage better, to practice self-care. Responsibility is pushed downward. The system remains untouched. Meanwhile, the emotional toll continues to surface in indirect ways. Irritability, numbness, anxiety, a persistent sense of not belonging anywhere fully. These are treated as personal issues, not cultural symptoms. The most damaging cost may be normalization. Distress becomes expected. Burnout becomes casual conversation. Dissatisfaction becomes the baseline. When harm is common, it stops being questioned. Influencer success stories dominate attention. They suggest that visibility is merit-based, that confidence and discipline are the missing ingredients. What is not counted are the thousands who tried and disappeared, the women who withdrew quietly, the ones who stopped posting, the ones who stopped believing they had something worth showing. The archive of failure is invisible. History often records what rises. It rarely records what was pushed down to make room. This culture teaches women to curate themselves as products, to package identity for consumption, to flatten complexity into marketable fragments. Over time, the line between self and brand blurs. Living becomes content. Experience becomes performance. When life is always being evaluated, presence suffers. Moments are not fully inhabited. They are assessed for shareability. This constant distance from experience drains meaning. Joy feels temporary. Accomplishment feels fragile. Even milestones lose weight. There is always a better version somewhere else. Always another comparison waiting. The system does not pause to ask what this does to a generation. It does not ask what happens when identity is shaped under constant surveillance. The cost is paid in confidence, lost, creativity muted, relationships strained, and time never returned. It is paid in the normalization of self-doubt as a lifestyle. Culture shapes behavior. Behavior shapes outcomes. Outcomes shape history. If we accept this system as neutral, then the harm it produces becomes invisible by design. This chapter does not end with solutions. It ends with responsibility. Because when a culture consistently produces harm, that harm is no longer accidental. It becomes part of the structure. And if our history records what we built, it must also record what it cost the women who were asked to live inside a mirror that never turned away.